Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Nash.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
And I'm Jennifer Landa.
And we're all here together to cover, discuss, and break down the breaking news from a long time ago. It's our Star Wars news show. Before we get to the news, catch up on life, talk to all of you. We're going to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from, of course, for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, we'll have our 4center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us, as we say around these parts. As always, we're not done with the A's. That's the Audible. And this is the Ask. Joseph is back in the studio to ask.
Yeah, I'm excited to be back with all three of us. It makes this Ask even more exciting because we need to refresh our Ask. Anyway, we are still asking for people to check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/4center. Everyone on our Patreon has been so incredibly supportive. It is very kind. One of the big kind of changes here with Patreon is we have been doing this series called Indiana Jones and the Perilous Podcast, where we get ready for Dial of Destiny. And we had said initially that those episodes are going to be available exclusively on Patreon until after Dial of Destiny comes out. And then we looked around and said, hey, you know how the movie discussion space works these days is sometimes there's tons of hype building up to the movie. And then the movie comes out and it's like piranhas. We say we eat everything we have to say about it in a minute, and then there's just nothing but bones left. So the hype doesn't last as long after the movie. We realized this, and we went to our patrons on Patreon and said, hey, we said we're going to release these episodes after Dial of Destiny, but would everybody be okay if we, and like, it felt like I could barely finish the sentence, and everyone in the Patreon was like, of course, of course, of course. So I bring that up to let people know that those episodes of the Perilous Podcast are going to be released publicly over the next 2 weeks before Dial of Destiny. But also to me, it was just a reminder of how great the community on Patreon is. And if you are interested in becoming part of that community, we've got a Discord there so people can have safe, fun, friendly discussions about Star Wars. Our next goal on Patreon is to get to 2,200, at which level Ken and I will do another Star Wars ranked that we stream live to patrons and get your reactions in the moment as we discuss our ranked. That's it. That's the ask.
That's a wonderful ask, and I echo all the sentiments there. You all have been so wonderful. I think sometimes the three of us can be a little hard on ourselves, where we work real hard, we're proud of the work we do, and then we feel that we're going to let you down if we do something different for a second. And you all have been so supportive, and we appreciate it. And I'm really proud of the Perilous Podcast works. I've been telling some friends, just wait till you hear the Crystal Skull episode. Oh, I'm really excited about that. So there you go. And also soon, the Jedi Beat YouTube edition will hit our YouTube channel. And that was made possible by the fine folks at Patreon. Status check, Jen, how's the B-roll going for that?
The B-roll is going. I am going through so many photos, old, I don't even know, blogs from way back when. And we're finding as many photos as I can to make it exciting and to correlate with the story that I'm trying to tell. So, yeah, it's fun.
Absolutely. You've got some wonderful stories you've already told, and you're just going to make them better. Excited for myself to see them. So that's coming soon on the YouTube channel. Let's get to some Star Wars or life adventures. This is where Star Wars and life meet, or sometimes it's just life. Sometimes maybe it's just Star Wars. Jen, we'll start with you. Father's Day, holiday weekend, a lot of stuff to probably get to, and I'm sure Star Wars was out there.
Yes, I'm going to call it Lucasfilm Adventures. we went to see Elemental at Universal City Walk at their AMC. Have you guys ever been there?
No.
Been a bit, but yes.
I was amazed. They had seats that, like, you can recline. I mean, it's been a long time since I've been in the movie theater. So much leg room. It was insane. My 3-year-old, who we decided to take with us, was doing somersaults off of this chair. Thankfully, she was not the only child there, so it was okay. We were hanging in there. But great movie. Highly recommend. But we saw the trailer for Indiana Jones. And, you know, I had told my husband beforehand, I was like, I definitely want to see Indiana Jones, but we can just wait till it comes out at home, you know, because we just, it's hard to find a babysitter. And then I saw the trailer on the big screen and you hear that music. And after the trailer ended, I looked over at my husband and we just nodded like, oh God, we gotta see this in the theater. So now we're trying to figure out a way to make that happen. But, and you know, they had the marquee with Harrison Ford as Indy in the lobby area. It just was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that he's back. And this will probably be the last time we ever see him as Indy. Maybe. You never know. But
We thought that in 1989 and 2008. So
yeah. Exactly. He keeps saying it's the last one, but who knows?
Who knows? Oh, it looks so good. So good.
Well, that is a wonderful adventure. Yeah. I know that feeling where you're like, I can't wait. Lovely. Quick one for me. Speaking of Indiana Jones, I had a wonderful opportunity to be Mark Ellis's date to the premiere of Indiana Jones last week. So no spoilers, nothing from me. Other than it was a very fun time and a lot of video out there, a lot of phones out there taking pictures, myself included. And the luminaries came out, and you had at one point on stage Frank Marshall, Kathleen Kennedy, who I will point out got a big ovation when she came out there in the theater. George Lucas, Spielberg, of course, Steven, a little something to do with Indiana Jones, James Mangold, Harrison Ford, and then the entire cast of the movie was there as well. And they all gave way to a special surprise concert of John Williams. It's you know, fun experience. Honored to be there. Blessed to have a friend and an extra ticket. But It's not lost on me when you're staring at the those folks who created so much of, you know, we say our childhoods, but it goes on. It just still fuels our lives. And so much, there's so much depth to be had in these stories, so much joy to be found in these stories. And it's great. And there's also the reality of time. I've saw a lot of people comment on it. And, you know, George is looking a little older. And then you have to realize, well, he is older. And
right.
That's part of the reality. John Williams working at 90. Harrison, you know, Harrison looks great. I hope look great, as great as him as his age, but it takes a lot of work, I'm sure. Or just, you know, something good to smoke at night. But he just looks, you know, that reputation of Harrison the Grump, which, you know, is maybe partially true, especially maybe at one point in his career. That aura is not true right now. He's up there smiling. He was moved when John Williams came out. Again, he was joking with the crowd. I just love seeing it. I think there's something of, by Force Awakens ushered in to me this era of Harrison looking back at his work, engaging with the work again, appearing in the work again, and having fun. And as a longtime fan, that was a big thrill to see.
Hmm. Huh, these are all great thoughts. I mean, I think some of the grumpy Harrison Ford, like, he's leaned into it for fun. There's almost like a twinkle mm-hmm. in his eye. Like when you see a headline when he's like, I don't know what the bleep a Kyber crystal is or whatever. You know, it's when people are asking him, and I think he knows, and like, okay, I'll give you your candy. You want me to be grumpy? I'll be grumpy.
Yeah.
But where it really matters that, like, he did all these genre things early in his career with the hopes that he could also do all sorts of different kinds of acting. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's just kind of a beautiful life arc that he got to do all sorts of different kinds of acting. He had his pick of the kind of roles he wanted. Mm. And now he can look back at the totality of his career and really embrace some of the roles that he was maybe grumpy about. He was never that grumpy about Indiana, but certainly, mm-hmm. you know, Han Solo and you know, the yeah. whole genre experience.
Yeah. Yeah. So I agree with that. And just fun to see and, you know, fun to again be around them. Fans of stuff, you know,
right.
I like when people like stuff and shout out, I got to see and hug and hang out for a brief moment with Gus from Triad of the Force and Nikki from the Imperial Center podcast. And you get to see all those faces and John Hoey and James Blaney of Resistance Broadcast getting to experience their first premiere. And you see the wonderful stars in their eyes and it's a fun experience. And I like experiencing joy around these mm-hmm. things because the internet has a way of taking away the joy today. Joseph, we bring you in here. Of course, you had to step aside last week. Address what you want and will, but I'm glad to have you back here today.
Yeah, no, very, very glad to be back here. And I was thank you both for jumping on at literally the last minute. We were recording at 10 a.m. and I believe I emailed you at 9:55 both and said, hey, could you do the news show without me, which I knew you could. And is a fascinating bit of Force Center trivia. Ken and I obviously record episodes together. I think there's a couple of Comic Cons where Ken, you were busy, so Jennifer and I recorded together. So right. This was the final combination to have an episode where it was just right. the two of you.
yeah. And you know, it's funny that the sub trivia is I've mentioned before, but there was a plan in action of I was going to offer Jennifer Landa to come take over from Maude Garrett on Jedi Alliance. Would have been wow. Jen and I holding down the show.
Oh,
and as I've told the story before, Jen waddled into the studio. And I looked.
That's accurate.
I looked at Phil Svitek and I went, yeah, I don't think now's the time to ask her. So it finally happened years later. But anyways.
Yes.
It was our honor to help out and pinch hit there.
Good, mm-hmm. good. And I hope you both had a good time doing it. I appreciate you doing it. Yes, for Life Adventures, it's been a very busy time since last recorded. We shot the short film that people were very generous to support on Kickstarter. Ken was an actor in that, and he did a great job. Some very, very funny stuff and some very scary stuff. I felt bad.
Yeah.
Real scary. I felt bad. I was like, that's good. It's awful that I asked you to do that, but that's real good. Good job upsetting me. That's what I asked you to do.
I won't spoil anything, but I can't wait till we do a director's commentary track. There was one of these things in the back of my head. I went, God, I hope he asks yells cut soon. I hope he yells cut soon.
Oh my gosh.
It is an amazing thing when you want, you're in the moment of, does this work for the film? But then you also always have to be a human and be like, but how's that feeling for the actor? Because maybe we should cut soon. And we'll have a fun conversation about whether I let it go too long. We recorded in Van Nuys, and I've been meaning to in a studio warehouse in Van Nuys, and I can't wait to look up how close we were to the beginnings of ILM. Because I think we're in the general neighborhood.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that was a wonderful time. And then the reason that I couldn't record, if people follow me on social media, they probably heard the news that my father-in-law passed away. And that was the morning that we recorded. We knew that it was coming, but really only for a short time. He had been diagnosed with cancer in October and had a stroke, but he was recovering from both of them. And is a very, obviously Star Wars has a lot to say about, our connections to mentors and parents and generational change and coping, with loss. So a lot of that helped me through, but it was, I was thinking about hope because here we're kind of half joking about, yeah, Harrison Ford is 80 and he said he wasn't going to do another one, but he might get a B in his fedora when he's 82. That's hope. My father-in-law had massive, massive amounts of willpower. And he was recovering so well. We had a huge, Disneyland trip and no one would ever know he was sick. In January, and then he was recovering very well from the stroke, but complications of the cancer advanced, and we had about 2.5-3 weeks where we knew to expect it, but it was still a shock. Star Wars helped me a lot. You know, this is the kind of thing we talk about where, you know, we can make jokes about the laser swords and why didn't they like change Luke Skywalker's name when he was in hiding and have fun with the silly parts of Star Wars. But I think the three of us are always very invested in the fact that there are big ideas in Star Wars and the way that Star Wars embraces the grief of loss and doesn't hide from it, but tries to find peace and purpose in it. Yoda's line for a million things, that is the way of the things, that is the way of the Force. Just that sort of, that calm, wise acceptance of this is reality. It simply is. And we need to wrestle with what is, as difficult as that is. Those ideas always really helped me. And I have to say the other thing that helped me when I posted about it on social media, just so many Force Center listeners, viewers responded so kindly. And it was yet another reminder that I think we've built a really, really good community. And I really felt the support and really appreciated it. So that was my main adventure of the week. This Sunday, obviously, it was Father's Day, and you know, we tried to handle that. I knew it was going to be hard for my wife, and we took our time and we processed. But I also wanted to have an actual Star Wars adventure, so I did buy the new Return of the Jedi Darth Vader action figure, which is, just seemed like the appropriate Father's Day gift. It's the one with his, you know, his helmet off and his hand off. It's weird, but it still is Vader as father. So I bought that for my Star Wars, my actual literal concrete Star Wars adventure of the week.
That's great and deep stuff. And yeah, you said some wonderful words to pay tribute to your father-in-law, as did Sarah as well on social media. So, that's part of the process, part of the recovery. And I agree with you. These big ideas find us when we need them. And happy to discuss this more than arms folded, but we're going to discuss some folded arms. I love the power and purpose of Star Wars and all these things and all these genre stories that we're happy Harrison's back to enjoy with them.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So yeah, thanks again and happy to move on to the news.
Well, let's do that. Let's move on to the news. Indeed, a little bit of a slower, quieter news week, which, you know, the focus is on Indiana. That makes a lot of sense. And We can't wait for y'all to see it. We can break it down on Perilous Podcast, but let's get to some Star Wars news. I call this the slow drip of Ahsoka picks, and it's continuing. Total Film via Games Radar and a lot of pop-up ads released an exclusive photo of the upcoming Ahsoka series featuring an arms-folded Ahsoka speaking with Hera via hologram. Hera on the hologram there with Professor Huang in the background. So we're going to get into this photo a little bit here. Going to get some of the kerfluffle around it. But before we get to that, we got to find the joy. There's a lot of joy here. I want to focus first on this. What does the October 2012 version of yourself think of this information, Jen? Hera, hologram, Ahsoka, Professor Huang droid from the Clone Wars you kind of remembered. Where's your mind go?
If I'm being honest, I probably would be a little bit resistant to it. I was so tied to Ashley Eckstein as the voice of Ahsoka. Mm-hmm. And I remember when the Clone Wars was around, and I really thought, boy, if they ever do live action, of course she's going to do it. I mean, she's an actress, like, you know, mm-hmm. not just a voice actress, but also she's been on lots of TV shows and things like that. So I love Rosario Dawson. I would have been a little bit conflicted, as I think I was initially when this was announced. I was like, I was torn, right, between my allegiance to Ashley and also my admiration for Rosario. But I'm sure they would have done what they've done now, which is like show that they are, that they're friendly with each other. They support each other. There's lots of photos of the two actresses together. And so I think eventually I would have come around. Like I have now.
I think that's an honest take. And yeah, I, you know, and I hadn't really factored in it. I think there might've been a little bit of that for me too, where I would have been like, what is this? What am I staring at? We're going to do this in a show version. So that also helps me understand some of the angst that can maybe spring up around these characters making the jump. We're going to talk about that more there. But also I think if the information had come to me that this isn't a movie, that this is a live action TV show of sorts. Streaming was something we definitely were hearing about back then. For me, the WWE Network was the first one I invested in, $9.99 a month. I remember those days, but that would have blown my mind. And it would have, 2012, when the sale happened, it's not that far back that you'd see those quotes from Rick McCallum saying, wow, we got 50 scripts and a live action Star Wars show ready to go. We can't afford it. It's too expensive to pull it off. Mm-hmm. So it would have been like, oh, we're going to do it. We're going to do it. We're going to get there. And I had by this point was had come around on Ahsoka. I was part of the early Snips crowd, unfortunately, but that was also part of the character's journey. And I would have absolutely been intrigued. But yeah, there could have been some confusion as well. I think that's a great point to bring up. But overall, just confused at the Star Wars overload in front of me, Joseph.
Yeah, I think, there's October 2012 me, and then like World of Difference 2 years later after I've actually watched all of the Clone Wars by October 2014. But I think for both of them, my reaction probably would have been the same of just like, is this real? Is this fan fiction?
right.
And that can kind of have a loaded, mm-hmm. reaction. And I don't mean it that way. It just seems so impossible from what we thought of as the difference between live action and in animation. Mm-hmm. One, I would have just been like, oh, cool. Ahsoka all grown up, because I wasn't really bothered by Ahsoka or even the Snips thing. Mm-hmm. The stuff I reacted poorly to when I first saw the Clone Wars film was just feeling like, we just finished this story with Anakin going dark. Why are we going back? And then, mm-hmm. Some of the surface stuff with I didn't understand what was going on with Zero the Hutt's voice at all.
Which is still fair, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Now I understand, it's an impression of Truman Capote. Okay, yeah. Without knowing that, it sounds like other upsetting things. Anyway, so I was never like super anti-Ahsoka. So I'd have been like, I think in a way I would have been like, the snappy, snippy teenager all grown up and looking kind of shadowy and broody, I would have been like, cool. Yeah. But I think the main thing that I would have reacted to is this, I think, reality that the success of animation in Star Wars and characters and fans' connection to characters has sort of backdoored aliens into being main characters in live action. Mm. And there was always a resistance to that from lots of people of like, okay, it's one thing if you got, you know, gorgeous, you know, Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill, and they can talk to the person with the weird crap on their head. But even for space fantasy, that's a bridge too far to have two main characters with weird crap on their head. I'm saying that from an October 2012 version. Now we all have very strong opinions about Leku and Montrol, and what's the difference between Montrols and Leku? Is Montrol just the top and the head tails are like, anyway. But that would have been a leap back in October 2012 or even October 2014. That I think it's only because of the huge runaway popularity of these characters that there's so many aliens as main characters.
Mm. That's a great point. And one of the things to celebrate of Ahsoka is this aliens in the lead, so to speak. And it's a very female forward, female led show as well, to be clear. But especially it's not a shot at Andor, but coming off at Andor or doing free or about it for non-humans. That's a general comment, I know. But yeah, that's an interesting point to go back there. The success of Clone Wars pushing that forward. I love that take.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the Professor Yang, you know, knowing that was the 10th Doctor. I guess I'd feel exactly the same as now. Very excited.
Yeah. I chose October 2012, roughly around the time of the sale. The sale, capital T, capital S. But yeah, I forget that too. The viewer journey of the Clone Wars picks up a little bit later, and a lesson that there's always new characters to fall in love with, even if they've already existed. You can see them again for the first time or get to know them. And the good professor is one of those for you, and many, I think.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to see all these Rebels characters, but you know, if there was a Ahsoka premiere, I'd be the weirdo with a, you know, Yang t-shirt.
Maybe there's still a chance. Star Wars Twitter was a flutter over the way Rosario was crossed in her arms. And last week, Jen and I discussed it was Hera's eyes. And soon it will be the voice tweaks of Lars Mikkelsen, who has already said, yeah, I've had to switch the voice a little bit. It's different when you're in a booth versus on set. That's a paraphrase of his quote as well. Now, we're going to start in here. Like I said, we weighed in a little bit about this last week, but Joseph wasn't here. So let me get some of that takes. You know, and I start with this. Is this just now going to be part of the discourse cycle as more characters move into live action? But Jen, I'll start with you on the arms. Too many folds, not enough folds, not right, not accurate. What was going on?
I thought it was a joke. It's almost to the point where it's like, it's so funny to me that every little detail gets scrutinized to the point where they're like, she's folding her arms too much. Is that all she's doing in the show? I'm like, well, obviously, you know, we know that if there was like an action still, people would be picking apart that too. I think it reminds me of my now 8-year-old. She is very much like, if you deviate from anything, the way that she has in her mind or the way that she knows something to be, she really gets upset. And that is something with her. And I think that there might be some people like that. I know that I have some difficulty with change, but I think people get so tied to the source material that any deviation from that seems wrong. And I think we have to think of it like, there's going to be a lot of variations, like Lars Mikkelsen said, which I actually look forward to. And we just are going to have to be open to this change. And yes, we love Ahsoka. We know where she came from, but now we're going to approach this in a new way. And we just have to have open hearts and open minds and know that there's going to be a lot of differences. But at the same time, one last thing I'll say is that Rosario Dawson spent hours, she said, watching Ahsoka's mannerisms to get her physicality right. So it's not like she's taking, there might be some liberties, but she's really trying to adhere to what came before her.
Yeah. And inhabiting the role within that. Right. And we want the actors to, you know, have their own takes, their own, you know, approach to it. This is the Alden Ehrenreich debate, which I witnessed that again at the indie premiere and bowed out of the conversation, buried my face in a bowl of popcorn, lest I start screaming at people. You don't want an impersonation, but at the same time, I want the actors to get credit for what they've done. That, you know, there's so much, you know, one of the things to be an actor, and this is, I was reminded, you know, I appreciate Joseph's words of me doing good for his film, but there's moments where, like, it isn't just the words, it's the muscle memory of the scene beyond just hitting the marks, but lights, right. Camera, is your shoulder slightly turned to the camera to expose your face? And but all those kind of things, it's a muscle memory thing as well. It's almost an athletic skill to me. And to watch someone like Alden Ehrenreich, you know, there's that one shot that I'm like, he looks like Indiana Jones and Hansel. He looks like Harrison Ford because of the way his hands are on his hips. I've obviously been studying a lot of Indiana Jones, Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. Interview with Sean Patrick Flannery saying, oh yeah, I watched those movies 30 to 40 times to make sure I could get how and the why. He acknowledges the difference of when Harrison would put the hat on as Indy and how he'd wear it around maybe a woman he was trying to impress or if he's in action. And then they, you know, this clip, it's a behind the scenes clip, and they do like a super cut of Sean Patrick Flannery putting on the fedora. He nails it. He nails it. But he also does his own version of the character. He's not doing a Harrison impersonation, but it's the mechanics of it there. And so for her, you know, I just know she studied it. And if you watch particularly the Book of Boba Fett, I think she's just nailing Ahsoka in terms of how she'd step, look back, speak, and the rest is her. And I think without getting too negative again, like we were last week, Jen, it's just it's a kerfluffle that it's hard for me to not roll my eyes at. But at the same time, I want to be respectful of the passion because I do get it as well. You know, Cad Bane's hat's a little smaller. I get it, but it's the realities of physical production as well. Joseph, you directed me in a muscle memory scene. How do you feel?
I think your muscles did great. No. Yeah, no, but I know what you mean of really wanting to have respect for the actor's craft. And that the amount of work they put into it. And I think it can be, I'm trying to find the right word. So I'll break it up into kind of what you said, Ken, of I really understand people being possessive about characters and moments and details that they care about. I really do understand that. There are things that, you know, in continuations of stories, sometimes when a little detail, gets dropped or they don't follow up on it and that kind of thing. Like that can stick in my craw. So I do understand it, but I think that there is a line that you cross. And I think I haven't seen any of these social media posts, but if there's someone out there literally saying, is this all she does? She crosses her arms too much based on stills. That's just disingenuous. We all know that there are many frames in the final Ahsoka show and that we should wait for judgment on does she cross her arms. I think the hard thing about this is there are people out there on social media where the characters mean the world to them and they're maybe being a little sensitive, and I want to be sensitive to that. Did Ahsoka help you grow up? Does she help you get through your day? Then I want to be sensitive to your strong opinions. And then there are people who are just, they have snark in them and they're looking for a target. And it's just disingenuous. And it's hard on social media when you're looking through to know people's soul and pick out which is which. But for me, as a criticism, does all she do is fold her arms? That's just snark looking for a target, in my opinion. Because wait until the show comes out. The other thing about it for me, and I think it really tracks with certainly Ahsoka, Hera, definitely Alden Ehrenreich as Han Solo is... The goal is to interpret the soul of the character. How does that get translated into body language? But the big thing is, it's not one-to-one. Alden Ehrenreich isn't trying to play Han in between Star Wars and Empire. Rosario Dawson isn't trying right now to play Ahsoka in between seasons of the Clone Wars. She is playing Ahsoka, and we want to see the Ahsoka we know, but it's also Ahsoka at an entirely different time in her life.
Right.
Yeah.
And if it plays out the way we think, a bunch of different times. I think we've seen her in Mandalorian being upset, and in Book of Boba Fett being in a slightly more clear place. And that some of her hand gestures are just exactly from the animated show. So I think that I want to have respect for what they're trying to do and what they're succeeding at doing, which is both interpret the character and take them into a different timeline. Mm-hmm. And then for this, on top of it, there's the animation aspect of it. And Filoni has been so crystal clear in every behind the scenes things from the Darksaber to Cad Bane. It's not difficult to find. He has said multiple times that he feels like animation is stylized. That's mm-hmm. not actually what Christopher Lee's face looks like.
Right.
Which is the comedy example everybody gives. But yeah, also, you know, Obi-Wan couldn't, you know, cut open a package of hot dogs with his beard. It doesn't come to that mm-hmm. sharp of a point in real life. It's stylized. And Filoni's been clear again and again that, yes, there's going to be some differences because we're translating them into live action. I think even Zeb's delivery in The Mandalorian was toned down from kind of much larger comedy, like especially those early episodes of Rebels where he and Ezra are like fighting around this ship and he's borderline Fred Flintstone. Ooh, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So I feel like for me, with the fan criticism and the sensitivity, I get wanting the characters to be what you recognize and what you want them to be. But at the same time, Filoni, the person who cares deeply about these characters, has told you crystal clear multiple times that his goal is to translate them into a different medium. Mm-hmm. And I think it's on us as fans to listen to that. And we can still not like it, but don't be surprised every time because he's told you.
He's indeed. And I bet during the Mando season 2 episode where he knew they were going to have to shorten Ahsoka's Montrails, he probably was up all night for 7 straight days.
Right.
What am I going to do? But the reality of it. And Jen, to kick it back to you here, you're someone who has long studied the creatures of Star Wars. It's one of your favorite things. You've done content about it. Is some of it for me too, because I understand, like, especially early Mando season 1 and 2, I think it's getting better and better, but like Trench Dosens, Ithorians, and you know, when you see them in live action, it always is a little different to me. I get some of the initial kind of like, I don't know, it looks like an actor in makeup. Yeah, that's because, you know, you can't go to Ryloth and actually pull them over there. So anyways, it's going to look a little different. But also, my question to you, Jen, is like, isn't it fair to say that, you know, George didn't have to take Bosk around and actually put him in it? He just had to stand in there.
Right. To me, I'm always amazed by what they do. Like with the Ithorian mayor from Book of Boba Fett, how they pulled that off. Mm. Look, so, I mean, you go back to the original Hammerhead, Moma Nadon from A New Hope, and you see how that puppet was operated and how they still made that look cool. I'm always in a sense of wonder about what these artisans and the craftsmanship that's put into, whether it's, you know, latex makeup or prosthetics applied mm-hmm. to the face or it. I have so much respect because I know how much time and thought gets put into it. The discussions that are probably had about, you know, the way that nose is going to look. And then actually then putting it on the actor, having the actor embody it. And that's the biggest thing, like with Alden Ehrenreich, especially, you know, we want the essence of the character. Mm. Yes, they could have had somebody that was an impressionist, right? Mm. Who can nail that voice so it sounds almost pitch perfect to Harrison's. But are they going to be able to embody the essence of Han Solo that we know, the spirit of the character? And I think that that's always the challenge when casting these well-known characters. Mm. And I think that that's what Rosario Dawson is doing beautifully. She's marrying that technical aspect of the movements and the physicality with her brilliance as an actor. That is tough. I mean, that's why biopics are so difficult to nail as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Like a Star Wars biopic.
well said indeed. I actually appreciate Lars unintentionally from a certain point of view, getting ahead of it, of going, yeah, no, the voice is going to be different because you try walking around set with them. He called it like melodic, almost like a Thrawn's voice as not a happy poppy sing song to it, but you know, it's just hard to translate to the set. And I'm excited to see his take on it, and maybe it'll help
Yeah, evil Paul McCartney, basically.
Exactly.
Love it.
Late birthday to Paul.
Yeah, the Trandoshan thing is such a great example because that's, you know, I didn't take to social media and vent about it, but I love Bosk in the Trandoshans in the first season of Mandalorian. It's like, they must be from a different part of Trandoshan. They must be from the southern hemisphere or something because they weren't quite there, but they got there.
They did get there.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally get it. And look, I've had some conversations around Bo-Katan. When Bo-Katan shows up, I think Katie does a great job of speaking like her version of Bo-Katan. And it creates for some, I think, this person, like some awkward kind of beats and rhythms in live action. Not bad. It's just, it reminds me, oh yeah, this is an animated character and you got to take it out of the booth. And I think she's doing this wonderful job with it, especially the way she sits in Thrones. But, you know, to those who did not know the origins of the character, it did seem a little weird. I had a couple of conversations, so it's a weird thing. But happy to see it. Happy to see this transition from animation, live action, and then live action back to animation. I hope we see these characters in more animated programming down the line. Mm. Fun. Mm-hmm. So part of this article that came out, if we can call it an article, this picture reveal. By the way, I think it's a Monday morning. I couldn't remember Twi'lek, and I almost said Rylothians. And now I'm wondering why there's Rylothians. Don't worry. Sorry. Mm. My brain needs to catch up. Rosario had a lot of nice words to say about Dave Filoni, as she has said before, but she really went in with some very big quotes about working with Dave, and she definitely wants to keep exploring the character of Ahsoka. That just got me thinking, and feel free to mention any things she said about Dave if you want. But what do we think about Ahsoka's place in this ever-growing New Republic era? Because I think this New Republic era with Filoni's film, the Thrawn factor, I think it's growing rapidly in my mind. One of those, we're not in the meetings, no scoops here, but just like, you know, I think 5 years ago, this wasn't in the plans at all. And now we do have it planned or coming because these shows have created these possibilities. So, Jen, from Snips to now, we got a lot of Ahsoka coming here, whether we get another series or not. What do you think?
It's interesting because in a couple interviews, Rosario Dawson has really been pitching for a second season, which is cool. I mean, we would love a second season. We haven't even seen the first yet. But because of Dave Filoni's schedule, which we're thinking that his movie might be the December 2025 release, maybe that's kind of floating around. Who knows? I think it might be a couple years before we get a second season. I just think that we're going to be seeing Ahsoka again. Certainly, I think, in that movie. I think we might even get more of her stories in the books, comics, right, in that era. So, and I think that they're going to make her arc in this show, in the Ahsoka show, happen so that by the time that we see her in the New Republic movie, she's going to have, like, this major leadership role. She'll have come around to trusting people again, trusting organizations again. Yeah. You know what I mean? I think I can't wait to see what they explore with the show first.
Mm. I love Rosario campaigning for more work. I would too, especially if you're in the Star Wars galaxy. I wouldn't want to leave it, but there's a big the big three question of Han, Luke, and Leia. What's their involvement? Recastings, all that kind of stuff. We've had those discussions and will again. But I was never resistant to this idea because again, I really Ahsoka became one of my favorite characters. I love the stuff with her. I think I might have had some resistance to her stepping in as sort of a leadership, not leadership in terms of the character, but maybe just kind of one of the leads in this era. But what about Luke? What about Han? My 1991 Ken would have come out. I'm excited about this because you have, I don't know. I'm just excited to see her at the center of this going forward, no matter what happens. And as she searches for, by the way, the pitch on StarWars.com on one of the slides right now is the Ahsoka series comes October 23rd. And it's about, I think the line is Ahsoka investigates a growing threat. It's so funny to see that because it's not Ahsoka looks for Ezra, right? Which we know is, but Ahsoka looks for an emerging threat. So that's big. She's going to find that threat, I do believe. And I'm looking forward to see, I think it's great to have her connect the eras, as David talked about. Anyways, I'm rambling through that, Joseph. Think about Ahsoka right now.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see kind of the shape of this show, of how much it it covers. I do trust that it will be a full meal onto itself, but I think with everything that's been said from Rosario Dawson to stuff that was said at Star Wars Celebration, that there's room for a second Ahsoka series. That maybe it's going to be set in such a way that if you didn't see Ahsoka again until whatever her role is in Filoni's New Republic film, that you'd be fine. But you could do a second season. Yeah. And it kind of makes sense to me that Rosario Dawson got this role partially by tweeting about it, right? People were fan casting her and she was like, yeah, that's great. And she is an experienced actor who has been around for a long time and has watched Hollywood change and evolve, and executives do care about social media presence and about audience, you know, connection with an actor. Yep. So it also just seems savvy to me of like somebody who landed this amazing role, who's enjoying it by tweeting about it, at least partially, might as well just say like, hey, in this day and age, we're our publicists, you know, we're our own publicists up to a point. So I'm just going to put my foot to the pedal and say, I want this. Yeah. I want to keep playing this character, and why not? So there's that just sort of logistic side of it to me. And then there's just this big question of what's the shape of Ahsoka's journey in Filoni's mind, how much of it lands in a New Republic film. And then also, you know, obviously the writer's strike, but even before that, we're still waiting for studios to decide what makes a streaming show successful in their eyes. What do they want that they can go tell their, you know, board, that they can go tell, you know, all the investors? Because there has been that sort of like, yeah, if the first season goes great, you know, maybe we'll look at another. And we used to know what that was, you know, viewership and ad dollars. And we're kind of waiting, like, okay, by good, what do you mean? Because you won't even share your numbers. We got a bunch of weird analytics that measure how many times people tweeted about it. What do you want?
Look at Willow. What happened?
right. Yeah. And against what? You know, is it? You know, whose residuals are too expensive or whatever? So my mind is on some of that practical stuff. For the actual Ahsoka's arc, one of the things that I'm really interested in is in Book of Boba Fett, she does seem more at peace. I think she's gone through some stuff that we're going to see. But in terms of her own journey as a Jedi, and Jen, what you were saying about organizations, I think it would be really cool if she was sort of worried about the legacy of the Jedi, and is that a responsibility I need to worry about? And like, Anakin Padme's kid has got it. He's got the legacy taken care of. Now I can just be a wandering helper. Mm-hmm. And that's really interesting to me.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah, especially seeing knowing Mon Mothma's on the way in the show, at least for, you know, at least one scene. Seeing her interacting with these big organizations like the New Republic government and maybe Luke's emerging Jedi Order and you know, almost as if she's like, you know what? I don't need full-time work anymore. I'm a consultant.
Right.
Tell you what's going on. I like that. And just, yeah, freeing her up to find her place in that even more going forward. Like you said, the wonder of it there. So great stuff. Yeah. Jen, any other? Oh, sorry. I maybe cut you off. Sorry.
No, I just think you've got a great title for the second season of Ahsoka, Consultant of the Force.
Consultant.
I love that. Yeah, that's great.
Love it indeed. Well, that's our look at the arms folded photo that caused all the kerfluffle. And in truth, there's been worse Star Wars drama out there. Just something that came across my desk. We want to discuss it here. We got some more news on the way, but before we do that, we're going to take a moment to have our Force Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. Joseph Dealer's Choice. You can go with this one or another one here. What do you got?
I'm going with Path of Deceit by Tessa Grattan and Justina Ireland. It is now 87 years old, but it is the beginning, I understand, of phase two of the High Republic. And I have got caught up a little bit on my reading, so I might be close to being able to dive into this one, Ken.
Me as well. I'm getting there. We will be taking a look at phase two eventually, but download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. All right, quick break. Other side, more news here on ForceCenter.
Hold up. Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to 4Center. I'm Ken, that's Jen, that's Joseph, and we are here in the virtual studio discussing Star Wars news. And looking out there at the headlines, this one caught my eye, even though I do think it's kind of a bit of a rehash, but this is what's going to happen, because with Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny galloping into theaters soon, James Mangold is definitely getting, quote, those Star Wars questions. And speaking with IO9, Mangold said this about his Star Wars story. For me, it's about, I want to be part of the saga, but also don't want to be beholden to so much lore in the air that you can hardly tell a story. What I really wanted to do, what I told her being Kathleen Kennedy, was just, can we make the Ten Commandments of the Force, you know, kind of origin story of how the Force came to be known, understood, wielded, and harnessed. So, like I said, the term biblical epic has been at the center of this project since announced, because I think Mangold said that on stage or some version of that at Star Wars Celebration. But he keeps coming back to this idea of the Jedi and others figuring out what to do with the Force. That's something that's kind of intriguing. Jen, what's your excitement level with that? And when you hear the sub question is, when you keep hearing Mangold talk about it, it's a long way off this film. But are you more intrigued?
I am really intrigued, and But I was surprised now he's not backtracking, but he's like, oh, yeah, it's impossible to know when this is going to be in the works. So it'll be a while before this comes out. So this was actually the first interview with him where I actually understood what they meant when they were saying like the Ten Commandments. I don't know. Maybe it's just because I've had a little bit more sleep. But I get it. And I really, really like it. But at the same time, going back to people being sensitive to this kind of stuff, and myself, I am a very sensitive person. And I want to hear George Lucas's take on this. Mm. It's hard for me, if we're going back to the beginning, the origins, where it all's going to start, to not have George Lucas's ideas involved. Mm. Can they use maybe some of his notes? Can he be a consultant on this film? Can maybe Dave Filoni, since he's the closest thing that we have, right? I just feel like this is such a monumental task that he has to kind of set up the entire Star Wars saga. And maybe I'm thinking about it so literally. Maybe that's my problem. But I just feel like this, I know he's saying he's talking about freedom. I actually, well, we'll talk about this more, but I actually think it's boxing him in more. Because I want to know what George thinks. Get George on the phone.
Yeah, no, I think there's some great thoughts there we can expand on here in a second. I really understand what you're saying there. And, you know, hey, he was standing like two over from George at the premiere on stage. Maybe he just reached over and said, hey, you got any thoughts on this? Who knows? Maybe it can happen.
I hope Lucas passed him a little note.
So yeah, I agree with all that there. And yeah, the biblical epic thing makes a lot of sense, but I think I really like the specific 10 commandments of it all, of this idea of like, hey, it's this thing we know it's out there, but we're learning about it. And here's the rules with it. And the coming to, you know, maybe getting to see the Jedi Order showing their work in the margins of their, test page. I'm there for that. And how I don't need it to necessarily be, all right, so we're going to call ourselves Jedi and we're going to wear this. You know, I don't need the nuts and bolts. We talked about the tech in a previous Q's episode. I do want to see maybe some of the tech changing as the story goes, or looking a little different than what we know it. I could live with that. It'd be kind of fun. But yeah, I get what he's saying. If now we're coming down the mountain and we got to figure out what to do with this. Joseph, that's potentially pretty powerful.
Yeah, I think that there's... The film is in the early part of the development. It's a concept, and it sounds like he's definitely got some story ideas, but you know, things can change. And as we know with the release schedule and with the writer's strike, and it's a time of, we don't know exactly when these films are going to come out or what order they're in. So I think there's a lot left to be fleshed out, but it is interesting that they announced this as being in the Dawn of the Jedi era, trying to define the eras of storytelling, that this doesn't necessarily need to be the story of the Jedi, because what he's describing right now is more an understanding of the Force that maybe that leads to the Jedi. But maybe this is even a sort of proto Jedi group, even before the Jedi, which would, you know, free him from canon of this all has to happen on Octo. And, you know, we need the Prime Jedi as the main character, you know, that kind of stuff. I think the things that I continue to be excited about is it sounds to me like this is going to maybe move differently and have a different time span than Star Wars films that we're used to. When he says how the Force came to be known, understood, wielded, and harnessed, that doesn't sound like three people having an adventure in 2 weeks. You know?
A whiz bang philosophical discussion.
Yeah, it sounds like an epic where you might follow someone from their youngest days to their oldest, wisest days. And, you know.
I'm laughing because, yeah, I was thinking of, we got like a fresh faced Jedi by the end. It's a beard down to their knees type of feeling, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I would love it. I think conceptually, what's really powerful to me about it is it really marries the fantasy, the fun space fantasy, and the philosophical depth of Star Wars. You have to deal with both of them. And to me, that might be some of the question of why someone feels the need to say, I have meditated, I have gone to, I now understand this as best as anyone can. And I feel like this is what this energy field means to all of us and how we should act on it. That implies both action and philosophy. And in particular for actual conflict, I feel like if it is about the discovery of a group of people acknowledging that this force is real, that there are those who are going to see it as a natural part of reality to be studied and respected and protected. And there are others who are just going to see it as a power to be used. And that doesn't even necessarily need to go to like Jedi and Sith immediately, but it's almost more like a very beautiful philosophical story of, say, discovering a waterfall and people going, we need to understand this place is power. We need to understand our relationship to it. We need to understand what it means. And it's somebody else going, I can use that to make money right now.
Damn it. Build the dam. Damn that waterfall and river.
Yeah. Yeah. Sort of like a big picture reaction to it and a selfish reaction to it. And I think that would be the kind of conflict that to me would be why somebody would feel the need to say, I etched some things into some tablets and here's what we're not going to do.
Yeah, no, it's big and set the center of it all. And yeah, there's a lot there. Jen, more thoughts on the approach there?
I'm envisioning Helen Mirren. Get her on the phone. Remember we talked about that? I could see it now.
Call her up. We were going to have you be old Rey, but now you're going to be Prime Jedi.
Prime Jedi.
Imagine hiring Helen Mirren and then just putting just a giant paper mache mask on her head to make her look like Prime Jedi.
Stuff. Mangold spoke about wanting to go, quote, backwards in the saga, opposed to being burdened by Star Wars lore and telling the story. I'm a fan of Big Jim Mangold. He's James Mangold, but everyone calls him Jim. I love that. Jim Mangold. I'm a fan of his work beyond anything I've seen recently. I forget how much I love 310 to Yuma, the remake, which was him. Girl Interrupted, all those films. It's been a fun journey to rediscover his resume, as I forgot a lot of the films I loved that were his. But I almost would disagree a little bit of there's this, I don't think it's the lore is going forward is not as heavy as you think as a creator. I think it's there. I think you can tell your own story. There's a lot of room. That's why we have some of these debates. You want Cad Bane's hat a little smaller? You could do it. The lore will tell you it's bigger, but no, it's smaller. I think he'd have more freedom than you think, but who am I to argue with him? He is a talented, skilled professional. He wants to go backwards, Jen, and you had some thoughts. I want to dive in more. I agree with you. I think this is the biggest amount of pressure you could take on as a creator in Star Wars. The beginning, the start of this, the Force, you're going to analyze the hows and the whys and the whats of the Force. Give me all the lore in episode 10. I'd rather write that than go back to the beginning, whether it's Octo, Prime Jedi, Tython, anywhere. This is a heavy burden, I think, for me. I'm glad Jim Mangold has taken it on, Jen, but your thoughts more on this there.
I would find it overwhelming. I thrive on like frameworks. I mean, give me Rogue One, give me Andor, right? Like those creators had no problem working within that timeline, which is very tight. This to me sounds like a daunting task. And I think, the flip side is at the same time, there's nothing to compare it to. Right. Mm-hmm. So obviously people are picking apart Ahsoka's arms being crossed and Hera's eyes because we've lived with these characters for so long, but nobody really has anything to compare this to or any source material. So I think that maybe fans might be a little bit more open to it. That's the only thing that I can think of, but he sounds very passionate. He sounds like he really has a great idea that he went and talked to Kathleen Kennedy about. So I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued. But personally, yeah, I think this is way scarier of a prospect.
I agree. Yeah, there seems to be a passion to tell the story. And it's the biggest question of all. And I agree. Yeah, we don't have anything to compare it to other than, I think, our own desires to know more of George's thoughts. While you were saying that earlier, I was like, man, I got to scour like the Star Wars Archives books. Maybe there's some quotes in there about that. We know he has some opinions of all that stuff. And thinking of what his episode 7 would have been, it would have been something a little different because of this kind of things, of him kind of digging deeper into the origins of the Force and what to do with it there. So a lot of pressure. And that might be the only thing we have to compare to it, our own expectations of how the Force began and how the Jedi began. So Joseph, it's big. You're a writer, you're a creator. Which side do you want to go? Do you want to go to episode 10 or you want to build it all from the beginning?
Well, I'm excited. We're going both directions. I really agree with Jennifer. I think that there is actually a lot to be aware of when dealing with this stuff, because it isn't the kind of where, when details of whoops, you can't have Greedo in this because he died and you're in the wrong part of the timeline. It's more the heart of the ideas. So for me, I think sometimes we can get in these discussions of like, what's the better way to be as a creator? What's the better story? Is it a better story if it's totally disconnected, or is it a better story if it's all interconnected? And to me, it's just not a binary. Different stories are different. Yeah. Different creators are different. Filoni and Favreau seem to embrace canon details as a gift of, well, who was around and who might answer this call? Or if you wanted the best bounty hunter and you need one that means something when they're facing the other bounty hunter, who's around? It's this, they have all these gifts. Obviously sometimes they tweak the gifts a little as needed, but they seem to embrace it as that's fun. We love telling a story where there are already a bunch of characters on the map, and that's fine. And I also think it's fine for James Mangold to be like, that kind of storytelling is not for me. I don't consider it a gift. I feel boxed in by it. Neither is wrong. They're different. So I feel passionate about that. But then getting back to, okay, well, if you don't want to feel boxed in, is the origin of the Force more or less boxed in? This broke me, and I finally Googled for myself to refresh the actual definition between canon and lore. And I'm not busting big Jim's chops on using the term lore he's talking off the cuff at a premiere of a different film.
Yeah.
So I am not being pedantic about his word choice, but I think we as fans could be mindful of it. Mm-hmm. The actual dictionary definition of canon that relates to all of our Star Wars talk is a collection or list of sacred books accepted as genuine. Mm-hmm. So what we're literally talking about, what is canonical, is what is in the library of this happened. Leia, Princess of Alderaan, is currently canonical. The courtship of Princess Leia is not canonical. Canon in general is much more about plot. Who is where, doing what, when. Lore is defined this way: a body of traditions and knowledge on a subject or held by a particular group, typically passed from person to person by word of mouth. So canon might be Cad Bane was alive then, and we know that from this resource, which is canonical. Lore is, this is what the Force means. It's the idea, it's the heart, it's the soul. And I feel like what James Mangold is talking about, and again, I'm not being pedantic toward him, is he's talking about canon. He doesn't want to worry about, like, see, you can't have that ship in the background because that hyperdrive wasn't actually invented yet. Kind of like, he's talking about canon. Not wanting to worry about that stuff. Lore is actually what he does have to worry about. The meaning passed down from person to person by word of mouth or on a note from George Lucas to James Mangold at a premiere of a different film. It is the lore that it makes this really, really powerful, because the canon details of what's the name of the person who first named it the Force, where, what planet did they live on, unless you're getting into Octo, that doesn't matter. What matters is the lore of what does the Force mean, and who do the choices in this story that are represented as positive and hopeful match what Lucas wanted to convey about the Force, of why it exists and what kind of lessons it can teach us. That stuff is, I think, Jennifer, what you were so wisely zeroing in on immediately is it's the heart, it's the soul, it's the meaning. That's what you have to deal with. Great. You don't have to worry about Dash Rendar isn't canon right now.
Exactly.
But you do have to worry about what the Force means to George Lucas.
Yeah. Way scarier to die. I don't want to go up against that. I do not want those expectations.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love that breakdown, Joseph, because I think it's valuable. And yeah, it's not about what Mangold said, and probably will continue to say. He's got a lot of things on his body. The difference of the word is not key to him, but I think it is different to the fandom. How many times have we heard, it needs to connect to the lore? There's lore heads out there that I love it, but I do think it's a little bit more. When I hear that it needs to connect to the lore, I think it is kind of, you know, canon plus, you know, like Disney plus, canon plus, where it is a little bit more than just simply the names and where they fall in the timeline for some of these fans. But to me, it comes down to the, you know, it shouldn't be Holdo. It should be Ackbar, which, by the way, that has a lot of other connotations. But not everyone maybe means it in some of those bigger ways. But I think that's what their view of lore is. Like, we already have Ackbar. You don't need someone new. You got him. And not exploring new characters, where the why of it all, why I think we show up here weekly to talk Star Wars, the big picture stuff, the peace and purpose lessons, all those things that you're talking about at top of the show, Joseph, that affect your own life. That's why we're here. And I think that is, to me, you're right. That's kind of the lore. And you can do that. I don't want to say wrong, but look at the necessary rage angle that emerged from the Trevorrow script and all that kind of stuff. Like, yeah, you could have some takes on it that don't line up with the lore of the Force. And that is that's dangerous ground. I think he's up for it. And he's obviously, you know, probably got some ideas he's passionate about. And he will have those conversations. He will sit down and say, all right, here's what I got. What does that mean? And it's not that the story group's going to circle him and be like, no. It's going to be, you know, Kathleen Kennedy and a bunch of those folks saying, hey, here's what it should mean, could mean. And here's the bumpers on your bowling alley lane to play with, if that makes any sense. But yeah, so I appreciate the breakdown between the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in some ways, I'm more excited for it, talking about it more and thinking about it more, because I think I had the same reaction of that. Well, that's actually the most daunting of any of the films that were announced to me. But there are lots of interviews with Lucas where he really shares what he means and where the Force came from, and the whole Power of Myth books and specials. There's all those great, you know, behind the scenes clips of him talking to the Clone Wars writers room, really laying out what he means. And I think if you take like just a giant step back, people can interpret the Force lots of different ways. I think people who really have real world religion as an active part of their life, they can look at it through that frame. For me, I always look at it in a very spiritual frame of it. It's a reminder that there is something more, that, you know, we are more than the sum of our parts, and that we are all connected. And it's this spiritual, beautiful truth. And I think if you just start from that point and then you say, now we have flawed characters wrestling with that.
Mm-hmm.
As long as it's clear that the film isn't advocating, actually the dark side is right.
Yeah.
There's lots of room to have flawed characters have different takes on it, as long as the film itself is ultimately clear about kind of the beauty of the Force. And I'm really interested also about it not necessarily being a walk up to the Jedi or even lightsabers. I'd like to see lightsabers, but it also gives itself lots of rooms of, this is a really early idea of how to handle the Force. And actually the Jedi themselves formed 100 years after this. It also gives it even more elbow room.
When those beards get long, maybe that's how it's
that's when Helen Mirren starts the Jedi.
Yes. Yes. Maybe it's because I've been knee deep and looking at the archives, but I just am visually thinking about George Lucas's handwritten notes, scripts, treatments from the beginning. And they are complicated. He has so many ideas, obviously some which we now know, some which they're still pulling from. But I know that I'm going to have to go into this movie as it, you know, continues to go through the production process, development phase. I'm going to have an open heart and mind, because it's going to be a different interpretation, and I'm sure it will still have that essence of George's ideas, but it is going to be something new. And the wonderful thing about Lucasfilm is that they do have so many people there that are continuing George's legacy and are now creating a new legacy for these stories. And so I'm open to it, but boy, I gotta let things go. Let the past go. But we're not gonna go down that road.
No,
we'll go down that road.
Yeah. Yeah. Honest as always, something we carry into it. And I'm with you. I mean, I'm definitely excited for it, but, You know, I might have my arms folded like Ahsoka at the beginning. Just like, all right, what do you got? What do you got?
Yes. This is good practice years out from when this film comes out in 2037.
Oh, my God.
We'll have had lots of time to process. Exactly. I think very honest, Jen, and I think very, very well said. We can learn a lot about how to watch Star Wars from watching Star Wars.
That's right.
Yes, indeed. And my final, you just kind of stumbled on it there, Joseph. The release of this, yes, we have this new revised schedule, which I'm convinced will change again because this has a lot to do with the current state of the industry, not that they're reshuffling their Star Wars releases because they want to. It is very much about the state of the industry, of course. But yeah, just hearing him, Jen, you said earlier, like he's got the Dylan biopic he's putting together now. They haven't begun making that. Obviously, can't write anything on it right now. There's a talk of another film between that. You know, this I'm not putting a curse on this project, but it just has that like, cool, we're doing this. We're going to get to it when we get to it. Right. That's what I feel. I think those release dates that are out there do have something to do with this film, but there's a reason there's not a title attached to them yet. It's untitled Star Wars.
Yeah. And I won't be surprised if it even changes directors by the end of it. You know, I think it's a great idea, and I think at some point they're going to tackle it, but who knows if Jim Mangold will be attached, or maybe he will be in some like producing fashion. I don't know.
We'll see. There you go. All right. That's our look at Star Wars news, biblical epics, folded arms. Oh, we touched on all of it here. We're going to get on out of here today. We're on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Subscribe over there if you want and are willing. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We're available on a lot of spots, including iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Merch available currently at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And you can also support at patreon.com/ForceCenter and check out our merch levels there. Get some exclusive merch to the Patreon page. Follow me at Catnapsock or go to my website, catnapsock.com, for more updates coming soon on stand-up shows. And, you know, maybe when you can one day watch some short films or something. Jennifer, where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram, where I'll be posting photos of myself crossing my arms, which is a pose I normally reserve for my business headshots. But you know what? I'm calling the Ahsoka pose now. That's right. Instagram, YouTube at Jennifer Landa, and TikTok at Jennifer Landa 1138.
There you go. Follow that. And Joseph, yes, where can they find and follow you? And, you know, one day, where are they going to watch things?
Yeah, you can find me on all the social media at Joseph Scrimshaw is my handle on Blue Sky. If you got an invite, come join us over there. It's like if Twitter was in a very small room with not as many people. Yeah. So come check that out. Still on Twitter, Instagram, hopefully getting back to TikTok and doing a couple of not unboxing videos. I have some action figures staring at me longingly, wanting that attention. So hopefully that will come soon. I'll have some more announcements about short films, about the one I made earlier this year with Phil Amar. Some news coming about that. And I hope to be able to share news about the one that Ken in his muscles did a very good job in. But right now my head will just be buried in my computer editing away for a little while, and that's that's where I am.
Love it. Godspeed to you. That's where my brain would start to explode like Belloc in Raiders of the Lost. There we go. All right, my friends, that is it. We'll see you next time here on Force.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.